All right, y'all, welcome back. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. Okay, so now to our last guest on the show today. It's Pepe Escobar from the Asia Times and author of Globalist Stand and Obama Does Globalist Stand. Welcome back to the show, Pepe. How are you doing?
Wonderful. Always great to be with you, Scott.
Great. Well, I'm very happy to have you here, although I hate the stuff that you write. It's so good. I mean, I'm not saying that, but it's all the truth that I don't want to know, but I have to anyway. For example, in the viewpoint section today on antiwar.com is this article, which I'm clicking on the wrong one. Where'd it go?
Sarkozy,
I had it. Yes,
to
King Sarkozy go the spoils. Yes.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is this war, that, correct me if I'm wrong, was organized and operated and ran by the Americans, even though maybe it was British and French planes doing most of the bombing. And our CIA guys on the ground, they had the French and British special forces. But as far as America's involvement goes, this was all for France, not for the USA, not for Houston, Texas?
No, it was especially for France. In fact, the Obama administration was very clever because the war was organized in France last year, as I wrote about this for the past 5 or 6 months, in fact, since Gaddafi's chief of protocol defected from Libya to Paris in October 2010. So the whole operation was organized by the Sarkozy administration, by French intelligence, and by some key defectors since October last year. The whole thing started, of course, in February. In the beginning, we had the impression, in the West as a whole, in Europe, in the U.S., in South America, that this was an indigenous revolution, just like in Tunisia and in Egypt. In fact, there were legitimate demonstrations in Benghazi in mid-February and late February. The Google generation, you know, unemployed lawmen or teachers. But the whole thing then was hijacked by this massive psyops operation organized by the French with the Brits by that time already. And the Americans came later, only after the UN Resolution 1973 was passed at the UN. And after that deal, I also wrote about that months ago. We talked about it on antiwar.com. Mm-hmm. The deal between the State Department and the House of Saud in terms of getting the Arab League vote, and then the counter-revolution, the Persian Gulf, would be totally taken over by the House of Saud with help from the Emirates and Qatar. So mm-hmm. This was in the beginning. Later on, lots of information came up regarding the French interest for this war, the very intimate relationship between Sarkozy and the Emir of Qatar, the fact that the Emir of Qatar is buying half of Paris and buying weapons from Dassault, you name it. So it's very, very close. Like Qatar is a sort of suburb of Paris or vice versa, or Doha, or Paris is a suburb of Doha and vice versa. You know what I mean? But this, these bits and pieces of information we learned in March, April, May, and only, I would say, by June, after the NATO bombing had been going on for 3 months or so, we could have more or less the big picture with the different interests at play. French, Brits, NATO, Pentagon, African, Qataris, Emirates, and the House of Saud.
And it's what, just simply who gets to pump the oil out of the ground and take the biggest cut off the top?
Oh, no, no, no. There's so many interests. In fact, okay, let's give it a very short version. For the French, it's the Total to have a bigger piece of the pie in terms of the energy from Libya. For the water companies, they are French. The big water companies in the world, they are all French. They want to privatize Libya's water.
Right.
And this has to do with Gaddafi's man-made river project, the Great Man-Made River Project, which is a system of pipelines piping fresh desert water to the coast. This was built by the Libyan government without involvement from the IMF or the World Bank. Mm-hmm. It's an example for the rest of the developing world that you can do these things without going to Washington to get financing or to be subservient to the World Bank's designs. Okay, this is France. Selling more weapons, of course, to a very unreliable customer, because Gaddafi would, okay, I want to buy your Rafales and Mirages. They'll say, no, no, maybe I'll buy Sukhois from Russia or buy weapons from China. In terms of NATO, securing the Mediterranean is a NATO lake. In terms of AFRICOM, having a base in Africa, they still don't have one. The headquarters in Stuttgart. So Libya was the perfect opportunity. The Brits, they wanted to make more deals with the government, much more pliable than Gaddafi. So, you know, there's so many interests. In Qatar, they wanted a new market in Northern Africa. Qatar and the Emirates, they wanted to be closer to NATO. They already have a very close partnership. But now, they are part of NATO as a whole. So NATO is, as a robo-global cop, if NATO decides tomorrow to have an intervention in South America, which the South Americans started discussing a few months ago as a strong possibility for the near or medium-term future, we're going to have Qataris and Emirates as part of the NATO intervention global COP force. So, you know, when you add this all up, the international community, between commas, that we've been reading in the New York Times, Washington Post, Le Monde, and all that, this is NATO countries, the U.S., and the Persian Gulf monarchy. The rest is excluded, and the rest means the BRIC countries especially, Brazil, Russia, India, and China.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa was coerced by, in fact, by President Obama, long phone call to President Zuma from South Africa to convince him to vote in favor of the UN resolution. But later Zuma repented, and he even went on a mission to Libya to try to convince both parties, Gaddafi and the NATO rebels, to sit down and discuss it. Totally spurned. In fact, the African Union, Africa did not exist in this whole conflict. African people did not exist. African, black Africans, sub-Saharan Africans, have been massacred by the rebels for months now. And, you know, apart from, exactly, antiwar.com, you have been covering this very, very well, at least, you know, pinpointing the absurdities. But you don't read this in U.S. mainstream media. You don't read this in the European major media. You don't read, of course, you never have a reference about this on Al Jazeera, Arabic or English. You know, so it's in terms of, I was watching Dominique Strauss-Kahn yesterday going on French TV saying it was a moral failure what happened with him in with that famous African lady at the Sofitel in New York. Mm-hmm. You multiply this by a cosmic 1 billion, and you have the moral failure of the West as a whole in Libya.
Yeah, well, it's amazing. I actually read an article that said, why is the media so obsessed with Libya at the expense of everything else? And I thought, are you kidding me? Obsessed with what? They haven't talked about Libya in months. That whole thing, it was promised to last a couple of days, and Americans just don't have patience for a TV show that's only, you know, about the French and the Africans after all and whatever. They're done. It failed in the first half season, you know?
It's true. And because, of course, if you start
pointing out... Wait a minute now. I'm sorry. I talked just right up to the time while the music's playing. We got to go out and take this break.
Okay, no problem.
When we get back, I'm going to set you up with a few more substantive questions, I hope, and... let you roll and teach us about what's going on in this mad war over there. It's Pepe Escobar from the Asia Times. That's atimes.com. We'll be back. All right, y'all, welcome back. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and I have Pepe Escobar on the line. He writes for the Asia Times. That's atimes online. And we're talking about the war for regime change in Libya. And, first of all, on the last few months, Pepe, can you tell me real quick, am I right that basically the U.S. Navy aircraft carriers and the African Command and whatever were the top of the chain as far as ordering what to bomb and whatever, organizing it, flying their AWACS around in the sky and all of that?
Oh, yeah.
It was, I guess, British and French planes that were doing most of the bombing, right?
Yes, but don't forget that the war was technically initiated by Sarkozy's Mirage bombing eastern Libya at night. But a few hours later, AFRICOM started the war, like the real war. They launched, in two or three days, they launched over 150 Tomahawks. And this was controlled by AFRICOM. They had a mobile command in the Mediterranean. They had a command in a NATO base in Naples, in Italy, and they had their own headquarters in Stuttgart. So this was, the really heavy bombing was coordinated by AFRICOM. Then a few days later, AFRICOM receded and NATO took over. So this was a joint AFRICOM-NATO war in the beginning. So the Americans were deeply involved from the beginning. But this was, in the West, very few people talked about it. In fact,
yeah, but I mean, during the months of bombing, was it Americans who were calling those shots, or it really was at that point turned over to the French and the British to do it? Because there is no NATO, really. We're talking about the national governments here.
Absolutely. As far as we know, the shots were called by NATO, I would say around April, May, June. And then there was a strategic decision by the Obama administration. This was actually reported by the New York Times and the Washington Post later on, not in June, in early June. I think they reported about that 2 months later. They made a strategic decision to start allowing the Pentagon to give the best analytical knowledge and the best satellite imagery directly to NATO commanders to pinpoint the so-called target. So we can see that the past 2 months, the NATO bombing increased substantially. The devastation increased substantially. Collateral damage increased substantially because they, in fact, the targets included, according to a lot of independent observers in Libya, Westerners and Libyans, involved hospitals, involved the residential buildings, and not only the famous control and command Gaddafi centers in Libya, in Tripoli and elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So the Americans got really involved in the war again after that initial 3 or 4 day window when AFRICOM was involved. They started to get really involved again in August. And that's why we had the famous Plan B, which didn't exist until late August, in fact. The plan, NATO's Plan A was to kill Gaddafi, and there was no Plan B. And when the devastation increased with a better Pentagon-NATO coordination, and with, of course, with French intelligence and British SAS troops on the ground, Qatari special forces and Jordanian special forces on the ground, you know, they upgraded their overall coordination. Then Plan B arose, which was, okay, let's try to take Tripoli. And this was possible because the key brigade that took Tripoli, that was the brigade commanded by Belhaj, the former Al-Qaeda-linked Libya-Islamic fighting group guy, which is now the commander of Tripoli, of course, they were being trained in the southwest mountains, southwest of Tripoli. The best fighters were not in that strip of highway, Benghazi, Sirte, Tripoli. No, they were being trained in the southwest mountains, away from Gaddafi spies and Gaddafi regime infiltration. So when they were ready, they commanded the offensive towards Tripoli. They coordinated the offensive with the people from Misrata that were taken by NATO ships to the shores of Tripoli. So there was a pincer movement against Gaddafi's forces. And very important, the key military brigade in Tripoli, commanded by Khamis, one of Gaddafi's sons, they deserted. When they saw the writing on the wall, they said, oh, shit, we're fucked. And they simply dissolved, just like Saddam's forces in 2003, before Baghdad fell. It was exactly the same scenario. Baghdad actually fell in 2 days, and Tripoli actually fell in 1 day, when you look at it.
Well, and, you know, Kabul fell in a day, too. But
Kabul fell in a day. I remember very well.
Yeah, because they decided they would rather live to fight another day instead of stand there and die. So
exactly. And
wait a minute. So then the point is, you know, look, if you listen to TV, if they talk about Libya at all, this is this small thing that we're barely involved in at all, and it's going to be an over and done with thing. And don't worry, Obama doesn't really want to intervene there. And that's probably about as much as you could hear about it. But I wonder what's your prognosis for America being drawn into a long-term war. And it seems like their only way out is if they can snap their fingers and reconstitute a national government that actually has authority over the whole land of Libya under its old borders and whatever. And then say success, but what are the chances of that? And maybe I have that wrong. I don't know.
Look, the chances of that, I would say, if we look at the facts on the ground, are zero. From yesterday to today, once again, the TNC tried to constitute the government. They failed once again for obvious reasons, because we have opportunists from all strands, Gaddafi loyalists, former exiles in London or in Vienna, Virginia, near Langley, really, really hardcore Islamists from eastern Libya, in Benghazi and south of Benghazi. The former Libyan Islamic fighting group, the Belhaj people, which are armed to their teeth, and they already said, no, we have to be part of power, and we want Sharia law on top of it. And this is exactly what TNC had said last week. He said that Sharia law will be the basis of a new Egypt. So it's an absurd regression. You have, okay, it was obviously it was a dictatorship. We all know that. But it was a secular state. And if, the quality of living, the standard of living in Libya compared to the rest of Africa was infinitely better. So now they're going to regress to a Sharia law state with lots of Islamists probably in the government or if not fighting the government. So obviously, and these people are from eastern Libya. They have no sway with the Tripolitanian, western Libya, which is more urban, with better access to information, less tribal, in fact. And they're not going to go for these guys to rule them.
Yeah, well, so Panetta's only chance here is to basically, what they would say, learn the lessons from Paul Wolfowitz and Paul Bremer's errors in Iraq, and don't disband the army. Keep everybody in the Gaddafi government that you can, other than Gaddafi and his sons, basically, and try to hold that up, which means fighting a war against the jihadi types that we just fought the war for.
Exactly. So that's what.
So in other words, we're looking at Iraq in Libya from now on.
Yes. In fact, I wrote that we may be looking at Iraq 2.0, Afghanistan 2.0, a mix of both, or even a Somalia 2.0.
And this was also predictable from, you know, a week before anybody ever even said no-fly zone. Don't get involved in Libya or else we're going to end up holding purple-fingered elections and training up an army and fighting a civil war. We've seen this script before, and here we go. That easy.
Look, but look, the BRIC countries, they saw that while the British and the French were trying to redact what became UN Resolution 1973, the BRIC country ambassadors, they got together and said, look, we simply cannot vote for this thing because this is a green card for occupation. For for occupation forever, in fact. There were so many loopholes. And that's exactly what happened. As soon as the resolution was implemented, it became a regime change revolution. And this is what the BRICS were saying still at the UN. And the Germans, who are, you know, in terms of diplomacy, don't rule them out, they also saw through it. It was an American, Franco-British carte blanche to have a regime change. You know, with using NATO, of course, as the weaponized arm of the UN, and especially legitimized by the UN. So, it was, in fact, this was the same thing as what happened to Iraq in 2002 with the UN added.
Yeah.
Exactly
so
the same thing.
Next year, it's going to be like Iraq 2004 and 2005.
Exactly. Exactly. So, look, don't rule out a coalition. Do you remember the Coalition Provisional Authority, the CPA?
Oh, yeah.
Sooner or later, we're going to have a CPA in Libya because this will be the only way for the NATO powers, especially, even if the U.S. still wants to have a back seat, to try to organize that mess, you know, and to put their Hamid Karzai-style puppets in power, the TNC people, especially the Prime Minister, Jibril, University of Pittsburgh, speaks fluent English, you know, very good connections in London and Paris and all that. They will love Jibril to be the number one guy and not Mustafa Abdel Khalil. They don't trust him, especially after the Sharia law pronouncement last week. You know, so they want Jibril to be their Hamid Karzai, but nobody wants him. And there's already a war between the TNC guys and the Islamists who have the weapon. In fact, they can take over Libya today if they want to. They have all the weapons, and they control Tripoli militarily. In fact, they are Gaddafi, the new Gaddafi government is an Islamist government. And it's crazy because as much as Gaddafi may be, as we used to call him, unreliable, crazy, eccentric, you name it, well, at least he had a little bit of spice to international politics. But anyway, that's another story. He was right from the beginning. He said this is a foreign intervention with Al-Qaeda allied with them. And that's exactly what happened. In fact, you know, the intelligence, the Libyan intelligence services were very competent And they saw it from the beginning what it was.
You know, with all the parallels between this war and the Iraq one that are already developing, it's funny how opposite it goes with the French, because, of course, last time the American establishment and media and everybody just hated the French for kindly warning us about our foreign policy folly. And now here we are just a few years later doing the exact same war for them this time.
Well, look, to understand this better, one has to learn how Sarkozy works and how the Sarkozy machine controls French public opinion. They control the media, even a newspaper which used to be center-left or independent, like Le Monde. You know, nowadays it's a Sarkozy mouthpiece. It's amazing, and Sarkozy has very close contacts with the French industrial military complex. For instance, wonderful thing that broke out in a French blog today. Do you know why Gaddafi managed to escape so far? Because he has a stealth 4x4, a stealth SUV.
Oh, I get it. Like radar-absorbing panels
exactly,
on the side.
Exactly, a radar-evading state-of-the-art SUV that is manufactured by Bolle. Bolle is equivalent to Raytheon in France. And they sold this thing to Gaddafi in 2008. So this was the only explanation that why...
Yeah, well, John McCain was trying to sell him armored personnel carriers for his shock troops.
Exactly. Why nobody can track him? Of course, because he's using this state-of-the-art stealth SUV, you know what I mean?
You gotta be kidding. It's amazing.
No, this is fantastic. And this was broken by a small French website. You need to pay to get this information. And they broke this story a few hours ago, actually. And it's the only explanation to why he wasn't tracked so far, even by NATO and the Pentagon.
You know what's funny, too, is if you go back, Eric Margulies says it was simply a cheap ploy where Muammar Gaddafi had been trying to suck up to the West for years and mostly saying, I want to be your partner against these jihadist terrorist types.
Exactly.
And they had been ignoring him for years. So what he did was he bought a bunch of garage sale junk from AQ Khan. And then he said, I'll give it up if you let me come in from the cold. And that gave them a PR victory after the Iraq war. They were able to say, yeah, we scared Gaddafi with that Iraq war, and so he fell in line.
Exactly. No, that's the story.
He learned the lesson. If you turn in your nuclear weapons capability, then you'll be safe.
Then you'll be safe. And that was his big mistake, in fact. Do you know who convinced him to do that? Saif al-Islam. London School of Economics graduated Saif al-Islam. In fact, this was not a Gaddafi decision. He was convinced by his family to do that, by the sons. The sons are dazzled with Europe. You know, they wanted to keep their houses in London, party in the Côte d'Azur, orgies in Italy, you name it. They love Europe. Their model is not the U.S. Their model is Europe, basically, especially France and England. And in the end, they got their bombs exactly from France and England. Gaddafi, in the beginning, was very reluctant to accept this, giving up his nuclear junk material, you know.
Right. All right, well, listen, we're already way over time, and I know you got to go, but I really appreciate your time on the show, as always, Pepe. I'm going to continue to call on you.
Wonderful. Thanks very much. And look, this week is absolutely crucial with the vote at the UN, especially. So expect major fireworks after that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I wouldn't mind if it would be okay with you if I was to do a follow-up interview with you in the next couple of days on that issue.
Yeah, okay. I'll be in Europe. I'm going back to medievalism next week. I'll be in Europe to see how low they can go. But we can do it from there, actually.
All right. Well, I think as far as cell phones, I only have your Thai cell phone, so maybe send me more numbers if you got them.
Yeah, I have an Italian number. I'll send you that number.
Okay,
next week,
great.
All right?
Hey, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Wonderful, Scott. Take care, huh?
All right, everybody. That's the great Pepe Escobar from the Asia Times. That's atimes.com. And you can find articles like Libya, the real war starts now.